The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. It's Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this Tuesday, the 20th day of September, year of our Lord, 2022. Let me begin with a prayer for and report on Puerto Rico, which is in darkness. It is still dark there. There is no power. Hurricane Fiona, according to the New York Times, deluged Puerto Rico with unrelenting rain, terrifying flash floods on Monday, forcing harrowing home rescues, making it difficult for power crews to reach many parts of the island. Now the island is once again in darkness, 5 years after Hurricane Maria inflicted more damage on Puerto Rico than any other disaster in recent history. The people of Puerto Rico need your help, and so if you know how to help, help them. They also need FEMA to get up and going. I'm not going to go start doing to Joe Biden what the media did to Donald Trump. There's very little a president can do about this kind of a disaster, except stage, call FEMA, and tell them to hurry up. But FEMA's full of pros. They'll get there as soon as possible. But just watch the coverage. If Donald Trump was president, we would have every news network in the United States covering the fact that the lights were out and people had died in Puerto Rico. And it's his fault. We're not seeing a thing about it yet because they don't want to embarrass an already beleaguered Joe Biden. The queen has been laid to rest. God bless her soul. God save the king. We can move on from that story. The biggest story is actually a political story. It came from Punchbowl News last night, Punchbowl News PM. Mitch McConnell will be fundraising for Blake Masters in Arizona. And he told the crowd that he was raising money for Blake. I think it's a close race. Now, what you've got to understand is that Leader McConnell remembers one thing. Virginia in 2014. It was an off-year election with a Democratic president who was unpopular, Barack Obama. It's before the big wave of 2016 brings in Donald Trump, but it's 2014. And McConnell got the Senate back, but they did not spend any resources inside of Virginia. McConnell got the Senate back, and people forget about it as a result of that. But we'd still hold the Senate if Ed Gillespie had beaten Mark Warner. On the night before the election, the composite polling showed Mark Warner 9 points ahead. I tell you again and again and again, the polls are broken. They do not know how, and therefore Mitch has his own polling, and he doesn't trust anybody else. And he makes them go deep, and he only goes deep into targets. And he knows that Herschel is ahead in Georgia. And he knows J.D. is going to win. And he's confident that Oz is tied or about to go ahead. He's also very confident of the dynamics of that race. Eric Schmidt is up 9 points in Missouri. We dodged a bullet there when we picked the right nominee. The Attorney General of Missouri is going to be Senator Eric Schmidt. That one is going to be a win. There is no other vulnerability. Ron Johnson is pulling away. In fact, we got a Mandela Barnes clip that surfaced yesterday. This is the guy who the Democrats nominated in Wisconsin, cut number four, Mandela Barnes.
We have to pledge to continue to push forward on that journey of progress and equity. We have to emphasize the importance of grassroots work in every community, which not only our federal and state representatives, but also our local elected officials. And as we've seen over the last several weeks, our school board members especially, and I didn't even get to the point about critical race theory. Now that's something else, too. It would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly.
It would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly. Mandela Barnes, meet all of your small business owners in Wisconsin who have made and saved maybe $500,000 over 40 years of working. Can we play that again? This is, by the way, the Democratic Party. Mandela Barnes, everybody got out of his way. He is John Fetterman. He is Chuck Schumer. He is AOC. He is Nancy Pelosi. He's caught being candid, telling you what he really thinks. He's talking for the Democratic Party. Mandela Barnes is the nominee of the Democrats for United States Senate. And listen, especially you people out there who are small business owners or who have saved your whole life. You've been savers. You've got equity in your house. You've just done it right. Here's Mandela Barnes, cut number four.
We have to pledge to continue to push forward on that journey of progress and equity. We have to emphasize the importance of grassroots work in every community, which not only our federal and state representatives, but also our local elected officials. And as we've seen over the last several weeks, our school board members especially. And I didn't even get to the point about critical race theory. Now that's something else, too. It would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly.
I find that astonishing that anyone would vote for someone like that. The 14th Amendment passing in 1868, slavery, of course, ending with the Civil War. There was still injustice after that. Separate but equal remained the law of the land until 1954. And so it's only been 70 years since we got started on truly treating people equally. And that wasn't perfected, certainly. But everyone who built their own business out there, you didn't build that. That's what Barack Obama said and what Mandela Barnes believed. John Fetterman made an appearance yesterday. And again, every time I talk about John Fetterman, I say pray for his recovery. Strokes are hard. Cut number three.
Hey, John, are you going to debate Dr. Oz before the voting starts?
It's the hot one, isn't it?
Are you going to debate Dr. Oz before the voting starts? Voting starts soon. Are you going to debate Dr. Oz before it starts?
If you had got the picture from the Salem News Channel, you will see that John Fetterman is wearing a Puerto Rico flag, which is great. And he's walking, which is great. But he's not talking because he can't. And he hasn't agreed to a real debate yet. Can I also go to Dr. Oz by contrast? Cut number two yesterday.
You got to have different people, different places.
And then...
We're going to go to Rock Ministries for sure because I can't get this many people in there.
Is this part of the plan today?
No.
Some of the hospitals offer detox.
So what are you going to do about our addiction?
You missed all the fun. The first thing is put the cigarette down. That definitely doesn't help because it breeds the belief that you have to put something in your body to get through the day. But the most important thing is the solution is this. Getting people to go to detox and give it a chance. It's going to fail a lot of times. But it's going to succeed a lot as well. You just keep trying.
Okay, so if you're watching, Dr. Oz is leading out of a pickup truck, engaging reporters as John Fetterman won't, talking about addiction, tells the reporter, first thing to do is put the cigarette down. You don't have to put anything in your mouth to feel good. Secondly, we've got to get detox and rehab going. He's really picked up his campaign. Other headlines from Ukraine. But let me do the Wall Street Journal first. Rents and other shelter costs are emerging as a major driver of overall consumer inflation. Economists expect housing inflation to strengthen further before cooling off. Overall, inflation was at 8.3% in August. There were price hikes in other categories like groceries, but housing is going to go through the roof, both rent and buying a house. The inflation rate is, we're going to go into a recession, we have stagflation. Politico's headline, how Democrats are trying to counter a wave of GOP attacks on crime, cannot be done. From the Financial Times, Russia has withdrawn submarines from its Black Sea naval headquarters in Crimea. Why? They're afraid of getting hit by Ukrainian forces. Also in Kyiv, post-Russian officials in the two self-declared separatist republics in eastern Ukraine pleaded Monday to urge for Russia in urgent votes calling on Moscow to immediately annex the territory, a sign of apparent panic that the Kremlin's war in Ukraine is failing. The appeals from Ukraine's authorities in Luhansk and Donetsk, People's Republic, comes as Ukrainian forces continue to extend their gains of recent days. Finally, Ukraine shot down more Russian planes yesterday. A total of 55 planes have now been brought down. Russia is losing that war. Let me do one more quick clip. Steve Kornacki, cut number 10 on MSNBC, talking about Biden policies and the underlying dynamic of the election.
What issues are the Democrats strongest on? Well, you see them right here, and I think the most interesting one is abortion. Since that Supreme Court ruling a couple months ago, this issue has rocketed to the top of the list for Democrats. Some evidence here, I think it's motivated their voters. Probably one of the reasons why the polling has gotten close, and we're showing this even generic ballot. Of course, what hovers all over all of this, though, is, again, the economy. You saw the Republican advantage on the economy, and when you ask this question about Joe Biden, the effect his policies have had in the economy, a 2-to-1 margin, folks saying it's more hurt the economy than help the economy.
There you go. So Joe Biden hurts you and the economy. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Drucker. That music means David M. Drucker on Twitter is in the house, at David M. Drucker. He is chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Hugh.
Last night, the news broke that Mitch McConnell is indeed raising money for Blake Masters. He says the race is close. Mitch does not waste time or money on lost causes. I doubt we'll see him in New Hampshire. But I do think he may remember, and I'm wondering if you do, the 2014 Senate race between Ed Gillespie and Mark Warner, where the Republicans spent no money because they thought it was a lost cause because the polls said Mark Warner was 9 points ahead right before the election, 9 points ahead. It was a dead heat. Do you think Leader McConnell's polling is better than the public polling?
Well, it's a really good question, Hugh. Look, I'm not sure what McConnell's internal polling is, which would probably come from Senate Leadership Fund. But the polling we've seen out of Arizona publicly has shown a tighter race. And, of course, these campaigns are dynamic, where you can have some missteps and some challenges early in a race, in the middle of a race, even toward the end of a race, but still come out on top. It's no different than a basketball game or a football game. It's like favorite analogy, and I think it's very apt. And it's a great comparison, I think, you're making to 2014 in Virginia, because it allows me to point this out, Hugh. In 2014, and in fact, until the 2016 cycle, there was no Senate Leadership Fund. When Republicans won the Senate majority with that 9-seat pickup, it was almost more in 2014, the first thing McConnell did, and it was a story I broke for the Examiner at the time, is create a counterpart to Senate Majority PAC, the Democratic Super PAC for Senate contests. And going forward, and including in this campaign, he has access and an ability not to directly direct money and spend money, but obviously through one of his top allies, Stephen Law, spend millions of dollars on Senate campaigns that were simply unavailable in 2015. Because they didn't have the vehicle. There was Crossroads at the time, which raised and spent a lot of money, but it really wasn't a McConnell super PAC, and I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, McConnell is interested in one thing, a majority. And so he's going to spend every dollar he raises.
Full stop, by the way.
Right?
Full stop.
Full stop. A majority.
Full stop.
And he said, first you got to win. I've interviewed him so many times. He always says, first you got to win. And I think he looks at this map. Can't lose any place. Dodge the bullet in Missouri. Schmidt's up double digits in mainstream media polls, so he's probably up 20 points. J.D. will win Ohio. It's a red state. Dr. Oz is drawn even, and Fetterman's no good. Herschel is ahead. There's a debate. It's, you know, and Brian Kemp is running way ahead of Stacey Abrams. So all of a sudden, we have maybe one flip and two holds. With Ron Johnson, Mandela Barnes has fallen on his place again. Have you heard the latest clip that came out yesterday?
I have not heard the latest clip.
Okay, let me play you the Mandela Barnes oppo that dropped yesterday, cut number 4.
We have to pledge to continue to push forward on that journey of progress and equity. We have to emphasize the importance of grassroots work in every community, which not only our federal and state representatives, but also our local elected officials. And as we've seen over the last several weeks, our school board members especially. And I didn't even get to the point about critical race theory. Yeah, that's something else, too. It would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly.
So, David, Mandela Barnes putting his arms around critical race theory, and it would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly. How's that going to play with small business owners in the dairy state?
Well, look, I think that's going to be problematic both with small business owners, but also just suburban swing voters, and particularly in a cycle where even with better Democratic enthusiasm that has created more competitive races, the underlying fundamentals in this contest
have always still tilted toward the Republicans. And when you're dealing with, you know, issues like rising crime and inflation, concerns about the border, and still a Republican enthusiasm edge, may not be as yawning as it was, but still an edge, this is just going to be problematic. Wisconsin is a swing state. And look, Ron Johnson has a track record of gutting out tough races.
Yeah, so then we go out west. Colorado, Nevada, Arizona, and Washington State. Those are all Democrat seats. Do the Republicans pick up one or four in your guesstimate right now, David Drucker, or none?
Look, my reporting in talking to Republicans and watching what's unfolded is that Republicans are in a good position in Nevada. I wouldn't call it a lot, but they're probably more optimistic about Nevada than in any of the states that you mentioned. I still think, despite the quality of candidates in Washington State and Colorado, that it's going to be a tough haul. But if you have the resources, you can fight for them, because in a cycle like this, that's when you win reach states, right? Whether
yes,
whether it's a
that's when Gillespie ties Warner. Cycle. That's when Gillespie ties Warner, and that's why Tiffany Smiley in Washington State, Joe O'Day in Colorado, and indeed Blake Masters in Arizona are all in play. I'm not buying this narrative that abortion has changed the wind. It just hasn't. Economics, David, last 10 seconds to you. Economics.
Yeah, economics is still the top issue. I wouldn't dismiss abortion because of the enthusiasm factor, but economics is still the top issue.
David M. Drucker on Twitter. Follow him and follow me to the next hour. Byron York joins me next on The Hugh Hewitt.
Hey, everyone. This is Dwayne Patterson, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show. I've known for a while now that there's been far too much of me here in the studio, and I finally needed to do something about my weight. My excuse was always that I couldn't follow a plan with the crazy schedule that I keep. I heard about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and how they customize their program for each client, and I decided to call. This was no problem for Rachel and the PhD team. They had me map out what my day looks like and created a plan to follow. And so far, I've lost 16 pounds already, and I'm just 2 weeks in, on the way to my goal of losing 45. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 and make your appointment for your consultation. The plan is simple. It's based on science and nutrition. There's no pills or injections, and they even include 80% of your food if you want it. Call them right now at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com and tell them you heard about it from Dwayne, the producer Hugh actually has on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this Tuesday, the 20th day of September, year of our Lord, 2022. Byron York of the Washington Examiner is my guest. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Of course, you subscribe to his newsletter at WashingtonExaminer.com. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Doing well.
It was great to see you on Thursday. Byron and I were on the special report panel with Brett Baer. And,
in person.
So it was lovely. It's a really wonderful thing. We were talking in the green room, though, about the interview I had done that morning with President Trump. The next morning, Byron, Jonathan Capehart asked me a question, and I responded to it. And I want to have you, given that you wrote Obsession, respond to the exchange. Here is Jonathan Capehart, my colleague at The Post, and I talking on Friday morning after Byron and I had been on, this is a little blue bubble beltwayism right here, been on Special Report the night before. Cut 16, please.
So, Hugh, I'm going to stick with you because you had an interview that everybody, and I mean everybody's talking about, and that is with former President Donald Trump. He was on your radio show yesterday. He told you that everything he took to Mar-a-Lago was declassified, and he has done nothing wrong regarding the regarding alternate slates of electors, therefore won't be indicted. Do you believe him?
Let me begin by saying I wrote our note to our colleague Mike Duffy this morning saying, Mike, what do I do with this transcript? What do I do with it? I set out to talk to him about seven things. Republicans want to talk about inflation and education and the border and crime in China. Democrats want to talk about abortion and Trump. And the president gave me many newsworthy nuggets. I don't know whether to believe him because he spoke to his intention. As Ruth will tell you, is a great graduate, associate editor Ruth Marcus of Harvard Law School. Proving up intention is a very difficult thing. Mens rea is an element of crime. So you need hours to get to intention. I kind of blown away by the amount of news that generated from this. I would encourage everyone to read
I asked him, are you saying violence? The left is going to say you're saying violence. And he said, no, I'm not inciting anything. I'm just giving you my opinion. Well, you know,
Byron, my question, should reporters have opinion on what they believe about interviewers' credibility?
Should a reporter have opinion on what they believe about interviewers? Well, they do.
Interviewees, about your subject matter. Should you put in, you interview thousands of people. You've been a journalist forever. And do you put into your columns whether or not you believe the people you're talking to?
Well, that door is already wide open with Donald Trump. I mean, most corporate mainstream reporters believe he's lying almost all the time. I mean, they do these articles about the 10,479 lies Trump has told since last week. So this is something that's absolutely common. Now, on the whole question of declassification, as I understand it, Trump has not legally raised that, although they mentioned it again in this response to the special master, I think, just last night. So, I mean, that is an issue, but it points to the bigger issue, which unfortunately Trump has still not addressed, which is, what are the documents about? I mean, we're having this huge controversy. There's this big investigation. There's all sorts of court proceedings, and we don't know what the documents are about. We're told they're classified, they're highly classified, they're the nation's most precious secrets, they're life and death, they're atomic, they're nuclear weapons stuff, but we don't know what they're about.
And Byron, let me also add, because not too many people realize, 11,000 materials were seized. 100 of them had classified markings. So 10% of 11,000 is 1,100. 1% of the documents is 110. So less than 1% of the document had classified markings. Judge Deary could be done now sorting those. And that would be a fact as opposed to an opinion. I just think we've lost our way with Trump into the world of speculation endlessly as opposed to reporting facts.
I mean, if you follow the left, I mean, they began speculating about this immediately. Trump had taken critical classified information, and he was selling it to the Saudis. Maybe he did it at Bedminster when he had that golf tournament at Bedminster. I mean, there's all sorts of just crazy speculation on the left. And the reason the speculation can flourish is because we don't have the facts. Now, there are a lot of people who know Trump, who theorize that whatever number of classified documents he had, most of them concerned the Russia investigation. And vindication in the Russia investigation has been an obsession of his since he was, you know, the beginning of the pursuit of Trump in 2016. And we do have an example in what was called the Nunes memo. I think it was January, February 2018. In which he did declassify information that tended to exonerate him in the Trump-Russia investigation. And by the way, it was really bad news for the FBI, showed that it used the Steele dossier to present evidence to the FISA court. So a lot of people think that whatever he has is related to that. But the fact is, we don't know, and it's hard to make an assessment of anything when you don't know what the documents are.
Yeah, and that's what I think journalists ought to start admitting. We don't know. Let's go to what we do know, what President Biden said on 60 Minutes. Let's play the COVID quote, Generalissimo.
Mr. President, first Detroit auto show in 3 years.
Yeah.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over.
If you All right, Byron, that's kind of a bit of news. What do you think?
This one sentence, the pandemic is over, has reverberated through the government. It is having shockwaves in the government because the U.S. government undertook all sorts of actions the pandemic starting in March of 2020. It increased spending. It created programs. It altered programs. It did all sorts of things. It spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars on this. The administration, by the way, is asking Congress for $22 billion more in COVID relief, and their hopes of passing that just went away with Biden's declaration. I saw last night Senator Richard Burr, the Republican who's leaving office, but he's the top Republican on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. So he writes a letter to Biden, and he goes through all of the things that the government has done in this public health emergency and the amounts of money that is spent. And he says, are we still going to do this? Is this over? What's going on? I'm going to read you one thing. It's a little wonky, but you know that because of the pandemic, the federal government has hugely increased the number of Americans who are on Medicaid. 25%, one in four Americans is on Medicaid now. And states have been receiving a huge increase in the federal amount of federal money they get for Medicaid if they don't throw anybody off Medicaid. So as a result, 25% of Americans are now on Medicaid, costing $10 billion in additional federal Medicaid cost every month as the emergency continues. So Burr asked, well, is that going to go on? What's happening here? So, but you know, it sounded like just maybe another Bidenism where he said something a little too bluntly. But this has huge impact across the federal government.
Well, he also said that American troops would defend Taiwan.
He did. Well, he said that several times now. I'm not sure that's a gaffe. That's not a gaffe. That's a change in policy. The old idea of strategic ambiguity is, I mean, is there any strategic ambiguity? I don't see it.
Well, I welcome that.
A bunch of times.
I welcome that because that's been the implicit promise and threat, which is do not attack. If they want to join you, you can join. We'll call it one China, two systems. But no one's ever said it out loud. But every time he says it, Byron, the White House, quote, walks it back. The White House being nobody in particular, somebody over there. I don't know, Jake Sullivan or Ron Klain or somebody over there.
Well, the Department of Walkbacks is pretty busy over at the White House right now.
You know, that's like the teleprompter department where somebody gets fired every time he mangles a teleprompter. So, Byron, wrapping up, I think Ed Gillespie losing to Mark Warner by a hair is the most important thing to remember. He was down 9 points on Election Day to Mark Warner, Ed Gillespie, in 2014. I don't believe Mitch McConnell is going in to help Blake Masters out of love for Blake Masters. He thinks he can win.
No, definitely no love for Blake Masters there. That's absolutely a fact. I think when you look at what's been striking to me, I was listening to you. You did mention Governor Kemp in Georgia talking to strategists, Republican strategists. They really believe the strength of the gubernatorial candidate is going to be incredibly important in some of these Senate races. Mike DeWine, super strong in Ohio. Kemp, strong in Georgia. Unfortunately, not strong for Republicans in Pennsylvania. We'll see what happens.
And the good news in Pennsylvania, history of vote splitting in Pennsylvania. Pat Toomey is the incumbent, and John Fetterman is nowhere to be found and can't talk. So Dr. Oz, who's hitting his stride, looks good. Byron York, it's always fun talking to you on Tuesday, seeing you in the green room at Fox. Keep working, friend. I'll be right back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. From number one New York Times bestselling author Vince Flynn comes Oath of Loyalty. Mitch Rapp confronts a very different kind of killer in the explosive new thriller in the bestselling Vince Flynn series. Written by Kyle Mills. In the game of politics, some ties must be severed. But the Oath of Loyalty can never be broken. Oath of Loyalty by Vince Flynn. Now available wherever books are sold. Go buy it today. I had a chance to interview the author Kyle Mills, so go to my podcast to listen to that full interview. Oath of Loyalty by Vince Flynn. Live inside the Beltway, United States Senator Ron Johnson joins me. He is in a re-election battle in Wisconsin. He has pulled ahead, according to the latest Marquette University poll, and that poll always understates Republican strength. Good morning, Senator Johnson. Even though the polls always understate Republican strength, it's still good to lead them. That means you're probably 5 or 6 points ahead of Mandela Barnes.
Well, good morning, Hugh. I'm taking nothing for granted. It's Wisconsin. I assume it's a dead even race, and that's how I'm going to conduct my campaign. But I mean, the advantage we have is all I have to do is tell the truth about Mandela Barnes when all they have are lies, distortions, character assassination because they can't defend their record. So it's still a dogfight. We need to point out exactly how radical Mandela Barnes is. I think last time you had me on, I think we had a little discussion. Was Fetterman or Mandela Barnes the most radical leftist? I think Mandela Barnes is pulling ahead in that race.
You're gaining ground because John Fetterman can't go out and talk about stuff. But yesterday on Grabian, there surfaced a new Mandela Barnes clip which I played this morning. I want to play it for you, Ron Johnson. I don't do pre-interviews. I don't know if you've heard it. Here is Mandela Barnes talking about the wealth of America. Cut number four.
We have to pledge to continue to push forward on that journey of progress and equity. We have to emphasize the importance of grassroots work in every community, which not only our federal and state representatives, but also our local elected officials. And as we've seen over the last several weeks, our school board members especially. And I didn't even get to the point about critical race theory. Now that's something else, too. You know, it would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly.
It would be foolish that the wealth of America was earned justly. How is that going to play with the farmers of Wisconsin and the small business people of Wisconsin, Ron Johnson?
I'd say about as well as President Obama's statement that you didn't build that.
Yep.
You know, I think folks in Wisconsin realize that, no, we did build this country. It's those of us who get up, we go to work, and we contribute. And we use freedom to dream, aspire, build, and create this marvel we call America. That's what people like Mandela Barnes don't get. I don't know where radical leftists get their resentment, where they get their grievances. Mandela Barnes, you know, his parents worked. His mom was a Milwaukee school teacher, a public school teacher. His dad worked third shift. But they did send their child, Mandela, to a choice school, to a private school. So they realized that the Milwaukee school system was not good enough for their child. But at the same time, Mandela Barnes wants to deny school choice to other folks that want to have the freedom to get a good education for their kids. I think that clip, by the way, was part of a talk he gave where he said the founding of America was awful. You know, he's implied that our national parks are racist. You know, he is for defunding police, but now he says he's not. You know, even though he's supported by the leaders of the defund police movement, he wants to abolish ICE, but now he says he doesn't want to do that. So, you know, he can't be honest with Wisconsinites about his real true feelings, what his true beliefs are, and unfortunately, Hugh, the media is covering up for him. They're not asking him questions. He's not exposing himself to questions, just like Fetterman. These radical leftists, again, they almost run sounding like they're conservatives. They embrace our ideas to get elected, and then, of course, they do the exact opposite, which is why they're so dangerous.
Well, Senator, I've been urging my audience that every school board at every level, you can't vote for an incumbent unless you're absolutely certain that they are committed to sound curriculum and school choice, and that he, in that clip, Mandela Barnes is talking, we got to get school boards, and let's talk about CRT, but not here. It sounds like an embrace of CRT, and I don't know whether or not he's been public with that, but it certainly is a legit topic. He introduced it.
Yeah, he's absolutely for critical race theory, but even worse, Hugh, both he and the governor, Evers, their goal was to reduce the prison population in Wisconsin by 50%. We've got a clip of him saying that the reducing the prison population is sexy. So now what they've done is they've actually cut the prison population by 15%, about 884 criminals. Now, wouldn't you think they'd start with the nonviolent? No. Only 11% of that 884, about 100 criminals, were nonviolent. The other ones were violent criminals, including 44 child rapists, 270 criminals who mostly committed or attempted murder. They've left these people on the streets, including somebody who beheaded his wife and threw her head in a wood-burning stove. Somebody who raped a 13-year-old, somebody who was under 13 years old at the time. These are the people they released from prison, and that's what Mandela Barnes is saying is sexy. Again, yeah. Again, you can't make this stuff up. But again, the media's not covering this. This is only coming out from conservative news outlets.
Well, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel hates you, and they hate Republicans, and the Marquette poll is broken. Let me talk about Joe Biden saying two things. COVID is over, and inflation went up just a little bit in August. Food prices at 13.4% year over year in August. Housing prices, according to the Wall Street Journal, for renters and buyers are skyrocketing. What is the president thinking?
Well, he's thinking about the election. He doesn't want to take blame for the inflation he caused. He's depleting our national oil reserve, petroleum oil reserve, for, you know, to play politics with it. It's the only reason the inflation stabilized for a month or two. But here, you know, a dollar you owned at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 88.3 cents. If you were a senior on a fixed income, you had the fortune to have $100,000 in a retirement fund at the start of the Biden administration, It's only worth $88,300. It's like the federal government, and this is what they did. They stole $12,000 from it. That's what's happening. That's what happens when you try and inflate your way out of this massive debt and out-of-control deficit spending. So, again, Democrats can't be honest with you. They can't defend their policies and the disastrous results of them. That's why they got to lie and not convey who they truly are and assassinate my character.
Ron Johnson, I remember so well, 2016, you practically lived on this show. You were considered by all to be a dead meat, and you ran through the tape and you won an upset. This time, you're at worst neck and neck, and I think you're ahead, but you're still going to run through the tape. Where do people contribute to Ron Johnson's Senate campaign?
It's ronjohnsonforsenate.com, spelled all out. They've already spent $70 million against me, Hugh. But
my gosh,
that's the least of my worries, because you said it's the media, and that's priceless. The media has been trying to take me out for 2 years because they hate my guts. I'm exposing their corruption. I'm exposing the corruption of the federal government. So, yeah, I need a lot of help. ronjohnsonforsenate.com.
Small donors matter. I tell people that. They don't think $25 or $50 or $100 matter, but they do.
It's huge. $5 matters. $3 matters. No, I mean, it's that accumulation of millions of people contributing a buck or two. You know, all of a sudden you have $2 million and you can run a pretty effective ad telling the Wisconsin voters who Mandela Barnes is so they won't vote for him.
Now, Ron Johnson, the Milwaukee has always eluded me, both as a market and understanding the politics there. What kind of margins do Democrats run up in Milwaukee that have to be set off across the rest of the state? Of course, you know, Madison, where the university is a deep blue bubble. But what about Milwaukee? Do you feel better about your Milwaukee ground game?
You know, one of the things that we've done, it had nothing to do with politics, is just trying to help people, which is the three-word mission statement about my office, to help people. When I started the Joseph Project, which worked with Pastor Jerome Smith, a wonderful man who's passed, but he was pastor of an inner-city church, and we just put this program together that we connected employers with people who formerly incarcerated drug, alcohol abusers. It's transformed their lives in the inner city. So, you know, those kinds of genuine actions, genuine successes, that's noticed in Milwaukee. So I think I've got a pretty good chance of appealing to a segment of the African-American population there, certainly the Hispanic community, who are just naturally conservative. They are faith-based. They're, you know, family-centered. They're hardworking individuals. I mean, those, you know, the Latino population is just naturally conservative. They should vote Republican.
Ron Johnson for Senate.com. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And again, I'll need a lot of help and support if you want to save this U.S. Senate seat, which is crucial if we don't want the radical leftists taking over this country.
We need to hold every Republican seat, including Wisconsin. How much did you say has been spent against you, Senator Johnson? $70
million? Over $70 million today, yep. And again, I've got the media out to destroy me, too, which is priceless.
Oh, that's the amplification. Well, just keep coming back. Ron Johnson for Senate.com. Thank you, Senator. Have another good day on the campaign trail. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Bel Air, holding in my hand a brand new book, Only the Strong, Reversing the Left's Plot to Sabotage American Power. You can only pre-order this book by Senator Tom Cotton because it doesn't come out till November. But I'm reading on my pre-publication book, the back of it. It's promising a pre-publication buzz and awareness campaign. So I think we qualify under that, Senator Cotton. Good morning.
Good morning, Hugh. I'm glad that you've gotten your advanced copy of Only the Strong and look forward to discussing it at much greater length when it comes out on November 1. But as you said, if you want to make sure you get a copy right on November 1, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, any other website that supplies books, and order Only the Strong right now.
You can. And in fact, if you go and get Only the Strong, you'll have it on November 1. It's going to drop right before the election. And I hope the book tour is very successful, Senator Cotton, because the little bit that I have read thus far, I literally got it on Sunday. And please don't send one to Dwayne because he'll steal it. But if Only the Strong is read by people, they will find in there you are an Army guy, but you make the case for rebuilding the Navy, among other things. And I found that first. And it's important for people to realize you are not parochial in your case for rebuilding the American military.
Not at all, Hugh. Though I served in the Army, I'm also a navalist, and I recognize the critical contributions that the Air Force and the Marine Corps and the Space Force all make as well to American power. You know, military power is not the only form of power, and it's not the form of power you'd like to use to achieve your national objectives. But as I explained, and only the strong military power undergirds everything else. Our financial and economic power, our diplomacy, our political relationships, without a strong and unchallenged military, all those other elements of American power are weakened.
Senator Cotton and I are going to spend at least a segment a day for the week up to publication talking about only the strong, because I want in people's hands when they vote on November the 8th. Senator Cotton, one more comment about this before we go to the actual news of the day. It's the transition. The subtitle of Only the Strong is Reversing the Left's Plot to Sabotage American Power. That will trigger some lefties. Chapter 2, The Progressive Roots of Decline. I want to illustrate what you're talking about in the subtitle of Only the Strong, Reversing the Left's Plot to Sabotage American Power, by playing for you Mandela Barnes, a new clip of the would-be Democratic senator who's running against your friend and my guest Ron Johnson, who was just on. Mandela Barnes and John Fetterman are the most radical Senate candidates I can ever remember. And Mandela Barnes said this in a clip that surfaced on Grabian yesterday, cut number 4.
We have to pledge to continue to push forward on that journey of progress and equity. We have to emphasize the importance of grassroots work in every community, which not only our federal and state representatives, but also our local elected officials. And as we've seen over the last several weeks, our school board members especially. And I didn't even get to the point about critical race theory. Now that's something else, too. You know, it would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly.
Critical race theory, it would be foolish to assume that the wealth of America was earned justly. Senator Cotton, my folks got here in 1868, penniless from Ulster. They farmed. My dad went to school, got to go to school. My mom didn't. And they made a lot. I just cannot stand when leftists say the wealth of America was not earned justly.
Yeah, you and I bet also a bunch of hardworking Wisconsinites who have scrimped and saved their lifetime, maybe built up equity in their home, maybe saved enough money to send their kid to school or take a nice vacation every now and then, would also wonder why Mandela Barnes thinks that their small savings that they've built up has not been earned justly through their hard work and through their effort. But this is part of the point I make in Only the Strong, that the left has had a plot to sabotage American power, going back 100 years to Woodrow Wilson and the progressives when they repudiated the moral foundation of America's constitutional republic, repudiating the Declaration of the Constitution. Once you do that, it's a fairly quick slide to what you saw in the 1960s and 70s with the Blame America First Democrats, as UN Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick called them. And Mandela Barnes is just yet another example of how radicalized the left has become over the last century. What you see happening in our country today is not an accident. It's not misfortune. It's not the result of incompetence or naivete. It is a deliberate plan. Like, don't for a minute believe that the chaos you see at our border is just because Joe Biden is incompetent or naive. This is exactly what he and his party intended. This is the logical outcome of it. Or look at what's going to happen this week in New York when Iran is going to be condemning America and saying that we in Europe need to let them off the hook and give them all kinds of sanctions relief. That's not the result of a bad deal that Barack Obama struck. Barack Obama struck the exact deal that he wanted to because he believed that America was to blame for decades of tension and conflict between the United States and Iran. And Senate candidates like Mandela Barnes and John Fetterman, who I agree are in a very close competition for the most radical leftist ever nominated for the United States Senate in a competitive race, would just continue that plan to undermine the sources of American power, our economy, our energy sources, our military, and they would weaken America.
Now, Senator Cotton, we are coming up to campaign season and all news disappears, but I've got to ask you about the riots sweeping Iran in the aftermath of the murder of a woman held for the lack of appropriate dress by the mullah standards. There are riots everywhere in Iran, as well as reports that the supreme leader, Khamenei, not the president who's coming to New York, but the supreme leader, Khamenei, is on his deathbed. Will Obama freeze in the headlights the way that President will Biden freeze in the headlights the way that President Obama did when the Green Revolution tried to get going in Iran in the first year of President Obama's presidency?
Well, Hugh, he won't take action to support these brave Iranians who are rising up in protest against their evil theocratic dictators. But I want to come back to the key point of only the strong. Obama didn't freeze in the headlights. Obama did exactly what he wanted to do in 2009. He believed that America was to blame for tension with Iran. And therefore, he was going to bend over backwards. He was going to extend an outstretched hand, as he said in the early days of his presidency, to Iran rather than a clenched fist. He was not going to take any action that would undermine his long-term goals of having a grand bargain that would atone for America's sins in his eyes and bring Iran into the civilized world and treat them as a normal nation. And if the price of that was the slaughter of a bunch of brave Iranians who were protesting against dictators in the streets in the summer of 2009, from Obama's point of view, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. And Joe Biden and the team that he has around them, which is largely the same team that Obama had around them, view it the exact same way. They are not going to take any steps that undermine their efforts to re-enter this terrible deal on even worse terms. So they're not exactly going to freeze or be incompetent or naive. Again, they're doing this deliberately.
We will discuss at length. Again, my plan for Only the Strong is to talk to Senator Cotton in five segments that we can play for the 5 days leading up to publication day, and then have a longer segment on Pub Day. But 12 books usually, that's the imprint, 12 of Hachette. And 12 usually prints enough books that they don't run out when there's a run on the books. There will be a run on this book, Senator Cotton. Have you got a publication commitment from 12 that it will not run out?
Well, at a certain level, an author or a publisher would be happy if you run out of the first run of books if it's big enough. But no, we've had a great relationship with 12 books over the last years. I've been working on this book, and I know that they've got a very robust first printing. But if you want to make sure that you get your copy of Only the Strong November 1, I'd encourage you to go on the web today and pre-order a copy to make sure you have it at the very beginning of the
Senator, I want to switch to Ukraine. I ran into General Kellogg in the green room at Fox Special Report last week, and we talked about what the Russians are evidencing on the battlefield. General Kellogg told me that the American doctrine is we leave no soldier behind. The Russian doctrine is run away. And as a result, the Russians are running away because if they get wounded, they're not going to get picked up by their buddies. Would you elaborate on the American doctrine and Russian morale and why they are different?
Yeah, I mean, the American doctrine is informed in part by the nature of our country and our bonds to each other. I mean, we have a volunteer army that joins together to fight on behalf of a system of government that treats every person with equal dignity and respect. And whether that soldier is going to be a private or a general on the battlefield, we will spare no expense to make sure we bring them back, dead or alive. As I write in Only the Strong, this is part of the story of what happened in the Battle of Mogadishu. We got to where we were in Mogadishu on October 3rd, 1993 because of Bill Clinton's terrible mistakes. Mistakes he made largely because he feared being portrayed as weak, which is another bad Democratic tendency. But when the second Black Hawk helicopter went down, while all those Rangers and Delta operators were trying to secure the first one, The two Delta operators, Gary Gordon and Randy Shuger, insisted that they be put down on the ground, even though it meant near certain death for them, because they thought, one, it might save some of the pilot and the crew's lives, and two, it would help them bring the remains back. The reason why the first helicopter, though, was still crash site was still being guarded is because one of the pilots, though dead, was trapped inside the helicopter, and all those Rangers and Delta operators refused to leave the site until they could get his body out. And that not a single one of them doubted or questioned that decision. Contrast that with what you see in Ukraine with Russian soldiers and leaders routinely leaving behind not just dead soldiers, but wounded soldiers to die or to be taken captive. And again, it goes back to their system of government. Most of these people are conscripts. Increasingly, they're getting people out of prisons and dragooning them into service, who are not fighting on behalf of anything noble or great or grand, but only for the delusions of the Russian dictator. It creates a very different kind of ethos among soldiers on the front lines, as we've seen time and time again in the Western way of war, defeating, whether it's increasingly Russia on the battlefield in Ukraine, Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan or Kaiser's Germany or so forth.
You know, if anyone wants to persuade a voter on November 1, pre-order Senator Cotton's book, Only the Strong, get a good supply of them, and then give them the book in the week before voting. November 1 is pub date for Only the Strong. Do that pre-order. You can do it today at Amazon.com. I'll post a link shortly. Senator Cotton, I have less than 30 seconds. Do you think Zelensky can actually get the Crimea back?
It's unclear. Yet, Hugh, I mean, war ebbs and flows, and it's hard to predict. And as Churchill said, once you've set sail on that journey, you never know where the tides and the winds and the hurricanes will blow. But right now, they're certainly on the offensive. A precondition for getting back Crimea is getting back the rest of southern Ukraine. But certainly, the momentum is running in the way of the Ukrainians right now. And that's why I think we need to continue to back them to the hilt.
Thank you, Senator Cotton. We'll talk again when we do the pre-tape. We talk every week about current events, but I just got my Only the Strong. Remember, don't send one to Dwayne or it'll never get to me. Only the Strong, available at Amazon.com right now. That's pre-publication buzz right there. I didn't know I was part of that, but that's what it is. Thank you, Senator Cotton. Coming right back, America. One more segment with John Duarte in California next. Welcome back, America. I look at a lot of campaign websites. And the reason I like John Duarte for Congress.com the best is the first thing you will see is help send a farmer to Congress. I love this. And John Duarte joins me from California this morning. Good morning, John. Where do we find you? And tell us where the district is.
Good morning, Hugh. You find me in the district out here in California. I'm right here in the Tracy area right now. It's just almost before sunrise. And the district, this district goes down Highway 5, which is the west side of the big San Joaquin Great Valley in California. It picks up a lot of the farmland that is basically devastated by government-imposed drought. I mean, of course, it didn't rain much last winter, but California and the federal government has been mismanaging our water so badly in California for so long. They've devastated our communities, our aquifers, our farms. And they're not recovering any of the endangered species. It's very sad. And so
John Duarte, John Harris is a friend of mine, and I've stopped enough times at Harris Ranch, and I've talked enough times with John and the Pacific Legal Foundation to understand a little bit about the woes of the farmers, as Victor Davis Hanson does. Is this district winnable? Tell me what the RD split is.
It's absolutely winnable. We were pulling dead even in it last we saw. We've moved this district from a likely Democrat seat when I got in the race in March over to a toss-up. Every rating group in America right now has this race as a toss-up. I'm outraising my opponent, Adam Gray, who's a Democrat with Gavin Newsom at the top of his endorsement list, looking to get a lot of help from Nancy Pelosi. And we can win this. I'm outraising him. I'm outworking him. Our messaging is on cue. We're talking to working families about the high cost of living, get water on the farms, drill American oils, all things my opponent can't say the same way I can pound on them. And that's what's resonating in this district. This is a D+4. If you're a political junkie, look at the Cook political ratings. This is a 42% Democrat registration district with 28% Republican. But this district voted to recall Gavin Newsom by 1.5 points. It's the only congressional district in California that voted to recall Gavin Newsom. We are feeling pain out here. And by the way, John Harris is a big supporter of mine, and Harris Ranch is in my district.
Well, so then we got to send you to Congress. John Duarte for Congress.com. But, John, they will throw a lot of Pelosi money at you. Small donors matter. How are you doing in terms of finances fundraising?
It is. The fundraising is going good. But if you go on the website today, we're posting some of our ads. We've got a new one out. I'm probably the most excited about it. It's in Spanish. It's called the Abuelas, the Mexican Grandmothers, and it's It's four of my employees, four ladies who have worked with me at the Duarte Nursery, my family's company, on average 30 years each. They have over 100 years of personal history with me and my family. And they're the actresses in the ad, but they're talking about their real issues and experiences. They're at the gas pump. They're angry about the price. They're in the store looking at what their dollar buys these days. We have so many families here in this district. It's a fairly low-income district. This was a Voting Rights Act district. It's 51% Hispanic by design. And these working families in this district are having a heck of a time getting food on the table and gas in the tank.
Goodness, that's brilliant. The Abuelas?
Yeah.
That's the name of the ad?
Yeah, the Abuelas. It'll be on the JohnDuartyForCongress.com. You can watch our ad. There's another one. The politicians did this where I'm in this devastated orchard, and we're talking about the government-imposed drought in California. They have mismanaged our water resources, and they're causing human health problems. When you take and you turn the Central Valley into a dust bowl, we have young children in the South Valley seeing levels of lung disease, emphysema, asthma, valley fever that we've never seen before because the particulate matter in the air and the dust bowl that's being caused by government water policy here in the Central Valley is devastating.
We lost you there, John. Are you still with it? Yeah. Okay. John, I got a question. Do you have Lemoore in your my son-in-law flew out of Lemoore for a while. Do you have Lemoore in your district?
We do not have Lemoore, Hugh. No, we don't. It's right outside my district. It's in David Valadao's district, and it's a great district.
But you'll get a lot of Navy people in your district because they'll drive over to the base.
Air Force Base. Yeah.
So let me close by asking, how do people help you?
Money. We are running these ads. They're on the website. They're terrific ads. We're bringing the working families, whether they're Hispanic, Hmong, Sikh. We have a very diverse community out here. We're bringing them all to the Republican Party by talking about cost of living, drill American oil, get water on the farms. We need to be a land of opportunity and affordability, and that's how the Republican Party wins all working families. It's not ethnic, it's economic.
John Duarte for Congress, JohnDuarte, for the benefit of the Steelers fans. JohnDuarteForCongress.com. John, thank you. Keep fighting the good fight and come back before the election.
Thank you, Hugh. Great talking to you.
He's a terrific candidate. Look, I will be back tomorrow, America. I wish I knew then what I know now. Don't go anywhere. I will be back tomorrow. Stay on this great station. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening or watching on the Salem News Channel. Have red prejudice leap forth, rip down all hate as green. Lies and lies of black and white, smoke from my skull I dream. Romantic facts of musketeers, foundation deep somehow. How but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.